Hola. Welcome to the Delicious Recap. Today, I am Rumi Carter. I am feeling my Beyonce era right now. We are all country music stars. And Rumi Carter, if you don't know her, that is Beyonce's daughter. And she made a song and Beyonce decided to feature herself on the song. It's a great song.
I did not know that. I mean, I've heard all this talk about it, but no, now I have to say, I mean, the entire talk about, you know, how great Beyonce's Cowboy Carter album is, all I thought about was you, because I know you're a Beyonce stan. I assume that you've heard the entire album already and you've heard this song that you're talking about.
I have not heard the entire album yet. So I'm still listening to it. I've only gotten to Spaghetti. And Spaghetti is a great song. I personally, the food Spaghetti, I don't like it. I don't care for it. But this song, Spaghetti, give it to me on a hot steaming plate. Like, it delicious.
Yeah, and I have to assume that it's some relation to, like, spaghetti westerns. Like, I think the kind of movies that Clint Eastwood used to do back in the day, I feel like spaghetti westerns, country music, maybe there's some relation there.
I think there's some relation there with the feel of it. You do get that very old west feel, which I love Clint Eastwood movies. I'm a diehard Clint Eastwood fan. And this album in certain parts already has made me feel like I'm watching one of his films.
Oh, I love it. So does this have any relation to do with Family Matters? Or were you just like, oh, I'm a Beyonce fan? I'm just going to say that right now.
It's nothing to do with Family Matters whatsoever. Rumi was not even in existence when the show was on. This is just an important staple in my life of loving country music at this point because I am in love.
Okay. I mean, well, hey, you know what? We had some country music theme in the last episode we recapped through Penny's costume choice. Through Shirley's costume choice. So I think that this country music vibe that Beyonce is giving you, paired with the Family Matters thing, I think that you are going to be a nice queer redneck soon.
Whoa, John, that is a loaded phrase. Oh my God, I don't want to be a redneck because that just sounds itchy. But it also sounds like I don't bathe before getting in the pool. So I don't want to do that. But I want to be like a rodeo star, maybe.
Okay. Like, I'm all for it. You know, the queer redneck thing, you do your rodeos and then you have like a big Gays for Trump sign somewhere on your lawn. It's going to be great.
Oh, I thought those things were a joke until I saw one in real life. And I'm like, ooh, wow. How are you today?
I am still sort of processing my life since giving up my radio gig. I've been working in radio professionally for 8 years, and it went from like a passion to a comfort zone to me. And once it got to a comfort zone that I was no longer as passionate about, you know, especially when it, you know, compared to podcasting, I decided to leave it. And, you know, the past week has been adjusting to a new lifestyle where I've been Instacart shopping and door dashing. And boy, when you go from a largely office setting to always being out in your car, using as much gas as you have to use, working, God, I mean, 12, 13 hour days, it seems like delivering this and here and there just to, you know, try to get up to like $300 a day. It's different. So, you know, my energy, my mental health has been not the greatest. So I'm adjusting. And I think at the same time, while we're trying to grow this podcast, it can seem like a lot. So how am I? Is I'm trying to discover a way to live the best healthy life possible. I know that, you know, quality time with my wife, I could always use more of that. So if that was an honest answer that you wanted or didn't ask for, either way, I already gave it. So that's how I am doing. How are you doing?
I am okay. And okay is okay for me right now, where I am just in this moment where everything is up in the air, but not in a bad way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of just like more invested into school, which, oh my gosh, we're going to tap into part of that in this episode. And I am just like learning more about myself going through this process and how I handle stress, because I wasn't doing a good job at it. Even through therapy and the things that I've learned, I wasn't actually using the tools I needed to use to actually handle the stress I was dealing with until this week. So I'm like, okay, I feel like I've gotten better at things that I was not very good at. But I'm also at a point where I'm like, okay, I'm nervous because there's change coming and I have to be prepared for that because I like this feeling, but I can't like get drunk off of it. I can't just live in this state of nervousness. I have to do something to manifest a way out of it. And it's just been a journey. I am rambling about it, but it's been a good journey.
I think both of us, we have that theme of what change can bring because I know what you're talking about. Like, whoa, change is exciting and I'm looking forward to it, but also, man, I don't know what it's going to bring. I don't know if it's going to succeed or fail. And that makes me nervous. That makes me anxious. That makes me stressed. So yeah, change is definitely a big part in our lives right now. I mean, I think you're speaking to the unfortunate work environment that you've been subjected to, right? Or am I not guessing correctly?
This is more just geared towards actually getting back into school because everything that was stressful when it came to everything outside of school, that subsided once I actually focused on that. And I'm like, I don't have to care about the stressful side of things. The toxic environment that occurs, the things that happen, I don't have to think about that anymore because there's such a benefit outside of it where I just have to put my mind and I've been enjoying this part of it.
So what about the schooling process relates to this episode that we're about to recap? I'm curious.
And the cold opening and how we get to Laura on her date.
Really? Okay. Yes. I'd be curious to hear more. Shall I give the basic facts before we get into it?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Season 1, episode 17, The Big Fix. February 9th, 1990 is the original air date, written by Sally Lapidus. Still don't know how to pronounce her last name. We'll get to it. Pamela Eales. I think Sally was the writer that commented on one of our posts. I think it was like promoting the Rich Corral interview like way back. And she was like, oh my God, there's a Family Matters podcast. And I had followed up with her asking if she could be a part of this experiment that we're doing. And she still hasn't gotten back to me. So Sally, hopefully you're still out there. Hopefully you're interested. I would especially like to get her thoughts on this episode. Speaking of Rich, he directs this episode as well. Jaleel White guest stars again as Steve Urkel. And unlike the 27 guest stars that we had the last episode, Andrew, Gino Conforti as Maitre D is the only other guest star besides Jaleel White in this episode. Did you know that Gino is actually a Chicago native?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, and he's still alive, even though he looks old-ish enough in this episode from over 30 years ago. The guy is 92 years old. And apparently, for those of you listening, if you've ever watched the show Three's Company, he was best known as kitchen helper / chef Felipe Gomez. Yeah. Have you ever watched Three's Company?
I think I have seen maybe an episode or two when it came on like Nickelodeon After Dark or something, or like Nick at Night, whatever the channel is, where they would like play all these very old shows. And I think I've seen it there.
Yeah, I think Nick at Night is the right name. When you say Nickelodeon After Dark, I'm like, whoa, okay, I guess we're doing some Playboy pornographic thing. All right, now.
I knew it was something. I'm like, what was that called? Because all I can think of is I Dream of Jeannie. I know they played that on there.
Yeah, I Dream of Jeannie, The Cosby Show, Sanford and Son, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. Nick at Night was basically Nickelodeon's TV land after hours where they had all the old shows. And our synopsis is that Eddie talks his sister Laura into going on a date with Steve Urkel, the school nerd. So we're literally taking the concept from episode 12 where Carl was setting Laura up with Steve, except we're replacing Carl with Eddie. So I felt like just coming up with this story, this was like the writers and producers being like, all right, Urkel, popular character. Let's capitalize on that. Let's capitalize on the chemistry that Urkel has with Eddie and Laura, and let's just make that into an episode.
I 100% agree. If episode 12 was our like introduction to Steve and we like just got in the car, this episode, Steve is driving and the pedal is to the floor. Like, this was a full Steve episode.
Yeah. And there was slapstick. And watching this episode a second time, because the first time I watched it was some time ago in preparation for our Rich Corral interview. This time, I was thinking like, oh, there are times where the slapstick gets a little bit much for me. I don't know if it was like that for you. I unfortunately was so attentive to how much I did not like the adults and how they treated Laura being forced to go on a date with Steve. Like, that was the big theme of it for me. I agree that Urkel is God. He's just there with his slapstick, his hijinks, his cute, goofy nerdiness. But the way the adults handled the Laura and Steve situation, it was like, it made the episode a largely bitter experience for me.
You know what? I did not pay attention much to the adults in this episode. They were very inconsequential for me for a lot of it. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say, because I paid attention to other things in the episode because I felt like everything that happened with the adults just did not grab my attention in this episode.
Really? Oh my God. I'm so curious to hear more about this. This is going to be interesting. Okay. All right. So you had mentioned the cold open, this tying into your experience with school. Can you talk more about that?
So in the cold open, we've got Laura and Eddie playing a video game. They are playing the Nintendo NES, which I have that system. I love that system. And if you know that game system, you have played some great things, including Battletoads. But this scene, immediately, I went back to like my high school days and now in college. It seems like whenever I am trying to take school seriously, new video games come out all the time. I'm playing Final Fantasy VII. I already played the game 20 years ago. I know what it's about. I'm playing it like I've never played it before. And it's distracting me from school.
So you think video games represent this sort of devilish thing that's trying to distract you from your purpose, your direction in life? Because that seems like a conflict. Because, you know, I know you have a passion for video games as well.
I have a passion for video games. I don't feel like they're a devilish thing just yet. But I do feel like my video games are something I can obsess over if I don't check myself.
Yeah. And to that point about Eddie, Laura, and Judy, Eddie and Laura playing the video game and Judy just kind of watching excitingly. Given how advanced video gaming has become with the look of the systems, the look of the games and everything, I don't know. There's just something both odd and interesting seeing these kids play with what I thought was like a really retro looking joystick. The TV also looks old enough. It was just like, wow. It gave me a reminder that 1990 video gaming could not be more different than 2024 video gaming.
100%. I think I've had a video game system in my house ever since I was born. So I don't think there was ever a time that there hasn't been a video game system. And that took me back right to my childhood of me and my brother playing like our Super Nintendo or even our just Nintendo at the time. And maybe a cousin or something was over. We're both playing and they just have to watch. And then they have winners in whatever game we're playing. And you never want to give up that controller.
So speaking of watching, what did you think about Judy being that person that you always see in video game situations? It's always like, oh, there's like the two or three friends that are like intently into the video games. And then there's that one person that's off to the side watching and they could either be bored or they could be like Judy and they're like into it. And they're like, oh, it's my turn next. I could never get the entertainment of just watching people play video games. I think you and I had this conversation some time ago and you were very for the experience of watching people play video games, whether it be physically in person, like at a friend's house or maybe like online and like those sort of like Twitch video gaming interactive sessions. I mean, can it be argued that when you're watching someone playing a video game, it can almost be as exciting as playing the video game yourself, because maybe you're imagining what you would be like if you were that person playing the video game. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I love to watch people play video games. I mean, I will have a live stream of a video game playing as I am playing a different video game as background noise to me playing a video game. Like, there's something about watching a video game. And I think if we go back to the NES, the system they're playing in the episode, there's a good amount of fighting games on there. And I love to watch people play so I can figure out my strategy when I finally start playing. So I can just see what the game is about, what's happening. I'm looking at what buttons they're pushing. Maybe there's a move set and I figure that out. And then you hop in and play. And there's something about that is so much fun where it's like, okay, I saw you play, but I know I can do it better, and watch me do it.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. Along with the fun. Yes. Especially if you haven't played, you could be like, oh, okay, you're fucking up, or maybe you're doing this move that I wouldn't quite do. So that actually, yeah, you're watching people play video games can inform you on how you would either improve or just do the video game uniquely as yourself. So that's an interesting comment there. I, of course, noticed the costuming. You and I will always comment on this. And I think given our conversation with Tyron Perry about like how she came in with her personal wardrobe, I'm starting to wonder if, like, you know, these kids, there's a little bit of reoccurring personal wardrobe in their choice, or if it's just the costuming department that's like, all right, we don't have a big budget, let's not spend a lot of money, let's just keep on bringing back the same clothing. Because Eddie was wearing a like kind of ugly yellow and dark blue / black striped turtleneck that I know I've seen him wear before. Did you see that before? Remember that?
I did see that before. And that was in another episode. He was wearing that. So I do feel like they definitely repeated some outfits in the cold open. The rest of the episode, though, I am entranced by the fashion. I think the wardrobe department got a budget upgrade for some of the outfits we see later on.
Okay. You'll definitely have to give me a reminder of what you're talking about. I have never seen Judy wear that jean dress before. That is a first.
Yes, that is a first.
And Eddie, Laura, and Judy, they're into the video games. And then you have that stereotypical thing, the, you know, Carl, Harriet, Rachel, they come downstairs as the adults that are like, oh, what are you guys playing video games? That's a waste of time. Go do something productive like homework and blah, blah, blah. Carl has a red button down sweater that gave me like a very smoking pipe grandpa Mr. Rogers vibe to it. A lot of Mr. Rogers vibes in the fashion in this episode, specifically with that button down sweater. I see Carl wear it. I see Steve wear it. Was that, do you know if that was like a hot thing back in 1990? Because that's just what it was. Or maybe Mr. Rogers had a really good year in 1990. I don't know.
I think like it was maybe in trend for like older men to have like a vest sweater situation going on as like a lounging situation. So I think that's what's happening. It looks good on Carl. I like that it flatters him, but it does look like very low budget Hugh Hefner.
Wait, I totally forgot. I mean, because I've always seen Hugh Hefner in that like creepy old man bathrobe. Yeah, I guess there have been times where he's worn that kind of button down sweater vest thing, huh? Wow. I noticed by the time this cold open ended, what was it, like 2 seconds long? It was a very, very quick cold opening. I was like, wow, very simple, concise premise. I mean, you get the kids playing video games, the adults come down, you know, pointing their finger, like, stop playing so much video games. And then, of course, the adults, they're, you know, when the kids go away, they're like, oh, yeah, we got to play this video game. And I really think that the directing of Rich Corell has really changed the pacing of this show, because things just move now.
Yes. The show opening was very short. This episode, I had to watch it back a couple of times because I'm like, how many scenes did I see in this episode? So excuse me if I do get confused on the scenes today, but I was so like entranced because it was moving at such a fast pace. But let's get into scene one, because from here, it's just time for us to get enamored with these characters.
Okay. I'm ready for the enamorment.
The scene one, this is the scene that I have trouble relating to being in school now. Carl is at the table with Eddie and they're talking about algebra. To me, I thought they were discussing French and Chinese. I did not understand a single thing that they said. And that is what I feel like when someone speaks math to me and I have a math course that I'm taking. So I'm still trying to learn how this goes. But Carl is explaining this math problem to Eddie. He says a lot of big math words. And then Eddie's like, it's got to be a letter or a number. And that is what I experience when I do math. How did that look for you, John?
Same. You and I are the same with math. Math might as well be another language to me. And as a matter of fact, the way that Carl was doing math with Eddie, and Eddie clearly wasn't paying attention, he's daydreaming about something else. I wish that Carl was my dad, because my dad, he was the stereotypical immigrant dad that, like, puts the pressure, and if you don't get math, it's all of a sudden like you're the worst person in the world. Like, I would just like slowly try to understand, like, I don't know, 1 + 2 = 5, and he'd be the type of guy that, no, 1 + 2 =, like, you could, like, he wouldn't like lose his shit, but you could see him like do that weird thing where he's calmly and intimidatingly losing patience as he's like, you know, writing, you know, all these different problem solving things on the board. And to him, it's like as simple as brushing your teeth, but to me, it's like, my brain doesn't work that way. I don't have the attention span. I don't have the patience. So I thought the kind, patient, bright, goofy dad way that Carl approached with Eddie doing math, although it was kind of misguided because Carl is giving me the impression that, like, oh, Eddie gets this, he blah, blah, blah. Like, obviously, Eddie's not getting this, but I just appreciated how Carl he seems very approachable about, you know, teaching his son math. I think a lot of dads can learn from that if they're not the most patient when it comes to teaching their children homework.
Yes, take a note from Carl Winslow. That is one note that I did have. I was like, okay, at least if I was in that scenario, I feel like it would be okay to be wrong. I wouldn't feel like I'm getting judged for not having the right answer here.
Yeah. I cannot tell you how many nights when it's time for my parents to check my homework, because I was in that kind of family. Like, oh, let's check your homework. Let's go over your homework. I would be so relieved internally if my mom had to check my homework, because I always knew that my mom was going to be calmer and easier on me than my dad, which, you know, again, he's just like, all right, you know, straight A's, pressure, let's go for the perfect standard here. So that is something that struck me with the Carl and Eddie back and forth. Speaking of the way Eddie was looking at Carl, did you notice, you know, so I got that Eddie was daydreaming and thinking about something else, but he was looking directly at Carl when he was doing that, and he was kind of giving Carl bedroom eyes as if he was imagining Carl as like this hot teenage girl that he wanted to ask out in school as he was daydreaming. I don't know if you caught that.
I thought about him asking about a girl, or he was looking at something really delicious and he just was trying to like, oh, I'm going to take a bite of this.
Yeah. Eddie was looking at the delicious recap, for God's sake.
I see what you did there. Tie-ins. Yeah.
I got to go back to this kitchen. I think I mentioned in the last episode that I hated the light gray painting in this kitchen. I'm noticing it again, but there's something very ugly white and gray about this painting that makes me notice the cabin brown furniture more. Like, the cabin brown furniture, the brown in it just pops out more because of the painting of this kitchen. That's a thought.
There is a lot of wood in this kitchen, and it looks very apparent. Ever since you mentioned these gray walls, I can't stop looking at them. They're just so present.
Yeah, and Eddie's outfit seems very blue to me because, like, remember his, like, he had a very tight, small, wintry blue multicolored sweater. It had all these patterns, but blue was like the base color. But like when it was paired with his blue jeans, something about that, even though there was multicolored within that sweater, it was just like, oh God, so much blue, like so much denim-y wintry blue.
It was super matchy. I want the sweater though. That sweater I was enamored with. Like, it's just beautiful. That like pattern where it's kind of like native-ish looking to some society, but still has this like little winter feel. I love that, but he did look like just a very bright blue column.
Okay, so you like that look. Okay, all right. I was looking at that look and I'm like, okay, I think I could have worn this in high school when I was trying to find myself, but hey, to each their own. I would like to see you pull off that look on one of our Zoom meetings, and I think we should like take a snapshot of it. The very blue denim-y Eddie winter in Chicago look.
I'll definitely do the sweater, and I may pair them as separates because the jeans were cute. It was a cute cut of the jean. It's too much blue together. Ooh, I'll do it as a get ready with me and we'll update the look.
I feel like we're turning into Family Matters Project Runway right now with all this fashion talk. Like, I never thought going into this recap that we would be so hung up on the clothing choices in this episode. It's so great.
There's a lot. There is a lot. And I'm happy that you've looked at them too, because that's one of my biggest notes. There's a lot of fashion in this episode that we could revamp for today and even still looks good if you just wear it as is.
When Carl has a moment where where he's like sitting on his chair and he's wondering if it's broken because it seems wobbly. Does that happen in this scene as well? Yeah.
So it does in this scene. I had the same trouble of how it transitions because we get that little scene when they're doing the homework and then it fades out and fades back in to everybody in the kitchen now where Kyle's trying to figure out that chair.
Okay. All right. So, all right. I guess we're doing that fade out, fade in thing. I didn't note that. That's very interesting. And, you know, of course, you know, Harriet automatically, when Carl is thinking about fixing this chair, she's like, no. Don't you think about it. Don't you think about it. That was a great callback to the Mr. Bad Wrench episode where Carl clearly is not the Mr. Perfect Fix It that he thinks he is. And I think a particular exchange in that moment that I loved was when he was like, oh, Harriet, I can do this. All I have to do is even out the legs. And Harriet's like, all right, well, guess that means we'll just have to buy a new kitchen set now.
I don't blame Harriet for her reaction once we see the end result. I don't blame her at all. But when he saw the chair wobbling, I'm like, just put a piece of paper under it. It would balance out evenly.
Yeah, but of course, Carl doesn't think that. He just gets all overthinky, like, oh, yes, I'm a man. I got to do the 3x5s by the 5x7s and the wobbly, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no. As you said, it could just be as simple as taking a piece of paper, putting it under the chair, and then boom, you're on the moon now.
Sometimes. Now, I can relate to Carl here because I go overboard. When I need to fix something, I'll get 45 different things when I could have done it with one item. So I understand the obsessiveness, but something like a chair, I'm with you. Just solve it simply. Let's move on because there's a lot bigger things that need to be fixed in this episode other than that chair.
Yeah, the adults. Adults. But again, I'm wondering what you think needs fixing in this episode because I know it's going to be different for you. So the moment where Eddie like wants to go to bed, because this is like at night when Carl is, you know, reviewing the homework with him and, you know, Carl gains all this confidence about his math knowledge and he has that goofy smile like, okay, you know, of course you get it. Of course you get all this math, Einstein. And, you know, I think that this dad did not remember the pressure that he put on his son from the Straight A's episode and how he eventually discovered that the so-called A's that his son had were faked from Rodney. So that was it, the thing I kind of noticed, but, you know, whatever. I mean, we've already picked up on Carl not learning his lessons from the past. And I was kind of sad that they didn't address the weird look that Eddie gave to Carl. They just kind of like pass it on. Like obviously he wasn't thinking like dirty shit, but like just someone being like, oh, Eddie, what were you daydreaming about? Like, I would have loved some acknowledgement.
A little follow through. I can agree with you. A little follow through. Like there was more that we could have pulled out of that scene between their interaction as opposed to just moving on. Like Eddie was paying attention the whole time.
And I think when Eddie tells Laura how much trouble he is in once Carl leaves the room, like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I'm going to fail this math exam. Did you notice Darius's voice cracks and it like the voice register itself sounds a little bit deeper? I'm like, between this and the fact that he's 9 feet tall, I feel like he's going to be like 25 by the end of the season.
I didn't notice his voice crack, but thinking of how he looks in this episode, he did look like he got even taller compared to everybody else.
It's insane. The Bobby Brown haircut, the reference about going to a Prince concert, even though at your age and knowing what kind of concerts Prince put on. Oh my God, that's a reach, but we'll get to that.
We have the same thought.
Yeah. Speaking of that was immediately my next thought because Eddie did say, like, if I don't ace this math exam, mom and dad won't let me go to the Prince concert. I've never gone to a Prince concert. I haven't listened to too many Prince songs, but knowing about the sort of story, the culture, the appeal of Prince, I'm like, wait a minute. I think this guy has like explicitly talked about, you know, wet pussies and whatever in his songs. Like he's a very overt sexual guy. I mean, should teenagers even be allowed in his concerts? I don't even think so.
No, teenagers shouldn't. I love Prince. I love some great songs. Purple Rain is delicious. And I love Prince. Prince is some baby making music. Like you will get pregnant listening to Prince. Just as soon as you put on those headphones, boom, 9 months and you're ready to go.
Yeah. He is quite an interesting figure. I certainly appreciate how he has allowed us to question masculine and feminine conventions and how like it is possible to integrate them together rather than like, oh, you're either this or that. So that's, I think, especially what I've loved about his persona. I think that especially because of that, it would be very interesting to hear or see what Carl's thoughts are. Because remember, like going back to the Laura's First Date episode, that cold opening, when Carl walked in and saw Eddie in that dress and he was like, oh, son, I think we need to have a talk. I wonder, in knowing if he got to a chance to know who Prince is and how he, like, you know, loosens what we might define as masculinity or femininity, like what he would think about that. I don't know. That was just like the threading thought that was going through my mind.
Now that you bring that up, it's something that I'm actually thinking about, because I wonder what Carl would think. Like, does he not know what type of music Prince makes? Does he not have any familiarity with Prince? Is Prince like out of his age range? Which I wouldn't think he would be. So now that just makes me think, like, really?
I think it would be a really great thing to study. I think one last moment I had in that scene was Laura suggesting to Eddie that like he should ask Steve Urkel for help with acing the math exam. Eddie was like, oh, I'd rather eat worms. And then Laura says, oh, well, he could teach you that too. So 2 points. One, we see that furtherance of the Steve and Eddie dynamic. And two, baby Steve Urkel is turning out to be more gross than I thought. It's like he's a mice eater and he's a worm eater. Like, does this guy eat normal human food at all?
I question it, because he's got some questionable food choices happening. I hope he did that as a baby, John, but I feel like he ate the worms and the rat as an adult. Like, I just see this happen. Well, as a 13-year-old kid.
Right. I mean, well, I should clarify. When I mean baby Steve Urkel, I mean him now, because it's actually like the guy's like 2 feet tall. So that's, I think of him as a baby, but like, yeah, kid Steve Urkel. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, wouldn't it be interesting if we actually see him attempt to eat a mice or a worm in this show later on as we go by?
If it happens, I will gladly watch. I will not partake in eating any of those items, but I will watch this happen. Yeah, I hope we do get that kind of transition in the future. One other thing that I did notice in the scene that just threw me for a loop, we have been inundated with Bobby Brown, and he's not going to a Bobby Brown concert. That is the thing that I stuck out to me. I'm like, why is he not going to go see Bobby Brown?
That would make sense. You would think so. Either the writers and producers realize, oh man, like we should make we should imply that we know more about popular music than just Bobby Brown. So maybe they decided to mix it up, or they realized in playing Prince's music the same way that they have been playing Bobby Brown that would not be possible, because again, I think almost all of Prince's lyrics, there's some heavy suggestiveness there. So I think Prince was one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, he's popular, he's relevant, he's what the kids like, but we can only mention him by word because we're a family sitcom. So let's pretend that Prince is just this popular person that appeals to everybody.
Could you imagine the Family Matters opening with Purple Rain in the background?
Oh God, Purple Rain. And then Reginald comes up with a smile to the camera.
Purple Rain. Oh, I need this edit. Somebody make this happen.
I've heard the song, I've heard the name. What does Purple Rain mean? Is it a reference to something? I don't know what it means.
You know, I don't know, because I feel like it involves heterosexual sex and I don't understand the mechanics of that fully.
I'm looking it up right now. Does your audio go off?
No, I'm still here. I'm just interested now. Okay. I need to know what it, oh my God, please don't tell me it's about moisture. If that is what it's about, I'm going to be scarred.
So under Google, under the question, what is Purple Rain slang? It says it's a nondescriptive feeling of boredom, restlessness, and confinement. A feeling one has when wanting to escape from responsibility, chiefly emotional, by traveling. Sometimes synonymous with wanderlust, the desire to travel in order to escape an emotional commitment. Okay, so I guess you're bored, you're restless, you are just done with the conventions of society, of like what being told that you should do, and you just want to do your own fucking thing and just be free, be lustful. I think that's what it means.
Okay, I could be a little traveling slut for Purple Rain. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, but honestly, like we should just do like a fucking fan edit where we replace the As Days Go By theme song with Purple Rain for the Family Matters opening theme credits. Oh, that's gonna hit so different with the family smiling in the camera the way we do Purple Rain in the background, because now people are just gonna be uncomfortable. They're gonna be like, wait, what the hell is this family suggesting they want to do to me with this song in the background?
Okay, I'm gonna make this happen.
Yeah, put it down in your notes. Let's write for it later.
That is gonna happen. Hang on. Okay, I got my pen because I'm literally gonna write this down so I don't forget this. So scene two, Steve comes in. He's walking in on Rachel, Mama Winslow, and Judy making a, is it a diorama?
Yeah, they call it a diorama. So initially I thought that Rachel, Mama Winslow, and Judy were just having individual arts and crafts time where, you know, they were like, oh yeah, let's just be creative and do our own thing. First thing I noticed was, Jesus Christ, Judy was making a fantastic forest painting. What part of the diorama was that?
I think that was maybe the background. Maybe she's like doing the background scenery of the diorama.
Yeah, it was a very good animated forest painting. And it almost seemed like the trees were coming alive and they were going to come and haunt me in my sleep. So bravo to Judy and bravo to Jamie, actually, if she actually made that painting behind the scenes, because that was really wonderful. And then I remember, like, when Mama Winslow told Rachel her log cabin that she was making is pitiful, and Rachel tells Mama to give her a break because she's on a sugar high from eating all those popsicles, you know, the popsicle sticks that make up the log cabin. All I thought was, like, that must have been a terrible brain freeze to go through all those popsicles. Like, we're focusing on the sugar high, but, like, your brain is probably done.
I didn't think about that because I was looking at the popsicle sticks, and I'm like, I hope she didn't get splinters. But now that I think about the brain freeze, oh my God. Poor Rachel, that's dedication, but it was a terrible looking log cabin that she built.
You know, I honestly don't have a context for that. I was looking at that and I was like, oh, that looks like something that I've seen a lot of classmates do in my childhood. What is a log cabin supposed to look like? Because it seemed like she was like building some kind of boxed house rather than a log. I mean, yeah, I guess if a log cabin is what it is in my head. Oh yeah, yeah, no, nothing like what Rachel was putting together. Okay, I see the picture now.
What Rachel built kind of looked like a deck of cards that was slowly turning sideways. And it was like, that's not a log cabin, Rachel. She could have done a lot better on that.
Yeah, it was a very Jenga boxy kind of house. It was something. And then as you mentioned, yeah, Steve comes in from the back porch door. He has a briefcase. He has the Mr. Rogers wardrobe from head to toe, literally from head to toe. Not only the sweater, but the specific shoes that he had on. What do you call those? Do you just simply call those old people tennis shoes? It always reminds me of that specific moment in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood where he comes in from wherever he's coming, he always has like his nice going out dress shoes on. And then he changes into what he defines as like his casual tennis shoes or sneakers. What do you call those kind of shoes?
Those shoes that Steve had on, those are Chuck Taylors. They are Chucks and I love them. The red ones?
No. The red ones are later on. The red ones are, the red ones are in another scene. This scene he's wearing like, they're like,
oh, does he have the loafers on?
I guess. Are they called loafers? They were Mr. Rogers sneakers. Okay, I'm going to look this up. I'm doing a lot of Googling right now. What are the sneakers that Mr. Rogers wore?
I don't know why I'm imagining orthopedic shoes and they are not orthopedic shoes.
Sperry shoes. They're called Sperry shoes. Sperry. So I did notice the giant red Chuck Taylors later. I didn't know that Steve had that big of feet. So I did notice that, though. What I recall from Steve's entrance, my first thought was like seeing him and Judy in the same scene. It's now going to be awkward for me because I know now about Jamie and Jaleel not getting along. So anytime they're in a scene together, even though they don't have much interaction or whatever going on, I just automatically think of the behind the scenes stuff and it like temporarily pulls me away from the story at hand. It's not so much, oh, here's this scene with Steve and Judy. It's like, oh, here's this scene. And oh God, here's Jamie and Jaleel, that bullying Jaleel, you know?
I do have that like 30 second take of, ooh, cringe. Like, I know this has got to be cringe. And I don't know how to get over that.
By Judy leaving, unfortunately. I think by after season four, when she's gone, you have no choice but to just be like, oh, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, but it's just, it feels weird. It feels a little weird. Like, even the kind of joke that's made, I kind of was like, ooh, this is cringe. When Steve comes in and he's critiquing everything on the table in their diorama, he looks at the little house and he's like, oh, that house is pitiful. pitiful. Judy, you should ask Rachel to do it. And I'm like, ooh. And I know it's written into the line, but I was just like, wow, I just feel cringe right now.
Yeah, because knowing what we know about Jamie and Jaleel, now it just turns into like, oh God. Like the way that Steve automatically assumed that Judy was the one that built that horrible log cabin, automatically you form that connection of like, oh man, what if that's like reflective of how mean Judy says that Jaleel was behind the scenes. So I didn't think about that at the time, but now that you mentioned that, it's like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense, that parallel. Oh, I love this line from Rachel. Steve, did it ever occur to you that when we keep the door closed, it's to keep unwanted people out? And then Steve was like, oh, well, I better lock it then. And obviously he was like very genuine about that as he was going to lock the door, not knowing Rachel's little sass. So I got the comedy, but I think that Steve unintentionally made a good point, which is Winslow's, if you don't want them in your house, maybe locking the door would be a good first step.
Yes, lock the door. I don't understand why this family has their doors unlocked. John, have you ever lived any place where you just leave your door unlocked?
Oh, God. So I gotta say, not my house, not my apartment. That's like, even when I started living up. So growing up with a religious, God-fearing Black family in Connecticut, and we were not in like, you know, fucking like Westport, all those white people rich places. We're in the Hartford area. We're in the rather diverse, sometimes poor surroundings. So in that context, you always have that fear put into you. Lock your doors. You never know who could come in. So growing up like that, with that mentality, like when I started living independently, like I kept that with me. The thing was when I started to do that big step of living on my own, like the big part of that, aside from like that brief time, you know, going off to college to live in dorms, my big step into independence was moving to Iowa. And you really get an impression of like the big difference between like an urban, sort of dangerous, crime-ridden city like the Hartford area in Connecticut to pretty much all of Iowa, which is like, oh, we're all white and we're all friendly and there's nothing happening and we can keep our doors unlocked. I met a lot of people who just casually unlock, like keep their front doors to their house unlocked. And although I never did that with my apartment door, I just started leaving my car door unlocked because I just kind of knew that, oh yeah, it's just so white and friendly and crime-free that I guess even as a Black guy, like I have nothing to worry about. So it's only has gone as far as my car door. That's actually, and I've actually taken that with me to Vermont, where a lot of the cases I will keep my car door open because again, you just have that feeling of like there's this very safe middle of nowhere rural thing going on. What about you? I mean, I would imagine you living in Rochester, New York. I mean, you always got to keep everything locked.
Never have I ever left a door unlocked. I'm locking a door as soon as I get on the other side of it. Never. Hawaii, Texas, New York, even in California, I am never leaving a door unlocked. You can't pay me to leave a door unlocked. I don't feel comfortable at all. I mean, my car here, it doesn't matter if doors are on it. People just break into it anyways, but my apartment, never.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine to me, especially with all the car break-ins you've had, it's like, you probably would be a fool to not at least try to lock your door, even though, yeah, I mean, with the car break-ins, it makes, seems like it's pointless. Whatever you can control, like you got to take that cautious step. But man, Andrew, if I had advice for you, is just live in a small rural state with a lot of white people and you will understand that, like, holy shit, like what is going on? Like when I first started living with my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, at a house that she used to own with her friend, middle of nowhere rural thing, they left their doors open. Like, and I would ask my wife Tony, like, what's going on? I mean, aren't you afraid? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and all she says is like, you know what, we got like 4 or 5 fucking dogs in the house. The worst thing that happens is someone tries to come in and rob something, they'll hear the dogs bark and they'll be scared and they'll just run away. Like it's such a relaxed, different mindset living in these white people only rural territories rather than like more diverse city surroundings like you and I have grown up in, where we always feel like we have to look over our shoulder, you know? So of course we're going to lock everything.
Yeah. I never thought of that. I don't know, John. I don't think I could ever move out to a rural country area. I just would feel too isolated, but maybe I'll give it a try. I'll rent an Airbnb someplace like in the middle of nowhere. No, that sounds like I'm going to die. I'm not going to do that. We're taking that off the table.
You want as someone who's lived in rural white people territory for the last 7 years, I mean, you'll be definitely fine for at least a visit. There are a lot of people here that are more welcoming than you think. I mean, yeah, of course you hear about, you know, the people that might think of people of color like us in a not so pleasant way, but I have been surprised by how many kind people I've passed by. So if you're just coming for a visit one time, yeah, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I totally get not wanting to live here permanently, but you'll definitely be fine for a visit. You have to come sometime anyway, because you promised you'd come up to Vermont for to show me a drag show experience.
Oh, I'm coming up to Vermont. I'm coming to show you a drag show experience. I just know with my luck, the Airbnb I'm going to get is like in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house. And next thing we know, Leatherface is cutting me up with a chainsaw. So I'm just like nervous about that.
I was going to say, how is the rapper Blueface going to, you know, be a horror movie villain in a scenario? That was a stretch.
It was a stretch, but he's scarier than Leatherface. I feel like that's true torture, having to hang out with that man. So I'll pass.
What I do love, going back to this episode, is when Estelle, Mama Winslow, when she genuinely calls Steve a very thoughtful person for locking the door, and Steve sweetly thanks her. It goes back to that, I guess, very close grandmama's boy dynamic that Steve and Estelle have. Made me smile, made me chuckle. And I really want to have an episode now where we have Mama Winslow finding out about the parental abuse from Herb and Diane, and she does like some karate kick-ass shit to take Steve in as her own. Because that's the love that Steve needs.
That is the love that Steve needs. I see Steve's connection with Estelle being so, like, good. And it's just like, she wants to bake him warm cookies, but if she finds out about what Frank and Diane are doing over there, she's going to kick some ass. We thought she kicked some ass in that other episode. She's going full on Rambo.
Yeah, Herb and Diane. You said Frank and Diane.
I always call guys Frank. That's like my go-to. If I don't remember their name, I'm like, Frank, but I am sorry, Herb.
But that's okay. Isn't one of Carl's brothers named Frank?
Yes, and I think Steve has an Uncle Frank.
Oh, God. What if Steve's Uncle Frank is actually his father, or Carl's brother Frank is his father? Wouldn't that be a twisted soap opera?
Cue the soap opera music.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What? You're my Uncle Daddy.
And yeah, then he says, did I do that? I would love that. John, write it. Make it a thing.
A soap opera named You're My Uncle Daddy?
Yes.
Yeah, me and my wife, we were doing this like fucked up down south Alabama shit where it's like, oh my God, you're my granddaddy uncle. You're my cousin. You're my cousin sister.
Okay. I imagine that these families exist, though.
Yeah, sorry. With all due respect to people from the South, we love to make fun of incest. That's just what we do.
You know, there are families out there that do the things, as long as everybody's consenting and nobody's being hurt. Do your thing. Hills Have Eyes is what it's going to turn into.
Oh, my God. Anywho. So then Steve says he got so excited to get a Winslow House invite from Eddie in this scene. And like, he was like, oh my God, I was so excited. I almost stepped on my tarantula. And automatically I was like, wait a minute, should you be leaving your tarantula loose? I mean, yeah, of course. Yeah, we could get into the whole obvious thing of like, oh my God, that's disgusting. You have a tarantula. But I was actually Googling like if it's safe to let your tarantulas loose. And Google tells me, one, that tarantula is a form of spider. So spiders are not social animals and generally should be housed one to a cage because they need a secure lid to their enclosure. They can be escape artists. The lid must also have ventilation. So I'm not going to get a tarantula. Definitely not. I mean, because I have a wife who is seriously afraid of spiders. So that's never happening. And I think you're afraid of spiders as well. So there's that. I think just talking about this conversation, you want to throw up somewhere. But damn you, Steve. Like, I'm here for tarantula awareness. Put them back in their cage so they could like really give in to their introversion.
Wow. Every word you said was triggering. My skin was crawling that entire time. Fuck spiders. Oh man, I'm sorry. That whole thing was triggering. I omitted that whole part of the scene from my memory because it's just triggering knowing that there's a spider crawling around the floor on somebody's house. I just, nope.
All right. Hey, fuck cancer, fuck spiders. That should be like a bumper sticker. Put that all together into one thing.
Put it together with a big heart around it or something, because fuck spiders and fuck cancer.
Yeah. Cancer is spider of the body, spider of the lungs.
It is. It is the internal spider, which now just made me cringe even more.
Oh. I'm sorry. Because I don't want you to like cringe throughout, let's move on. So Urkel meeting Eddie in the living room. And Eddie, like, he has a purple button down in this moment that sticks out to me. I was like, oh, okay. Are we having like a little Purple Rain reference?
It was a little Purple Rain reference, and he looked very jazzy in that.
He did. I was like, there's something very poppy about that dark purple thing. I was like, oh, God. All right. Play a saxophone for me, but in an innocent way, because you're a teenager. I'm not suggesting anything more than that. Yeah, I'm just realizing like the road we're going down, and I'm like, oh, no, Darius is a teenager. This is creepy.
Yeah, that was a little much.
Oh, God, we're going to get so much trouble on this podcast.
You know, the funny thing is, watching how they are dressing Eddie, he does dress like he's a pop star. And I imagined him like busting out with like a jazz solo or something. So you're right on track. The outfit is nice, but it does give him like he's going to be a jazz singer or something, like a speakeasy or like a little cigarette club.
Yeah, yeah. No smoking cigarettes, teenagers. No smoking cigarettes. But I totally get what you mean. And especially do not smoke a cigarette and like have like the ashes like on that beautiful shirt, because that shirt should just be as perfectly purple as it is right now.
Yes, cigarettes destroy clothes, kids. Don't smoke them. Or vapes. They're bad for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll tell that to certain family members that I came across recently. Anyway, we move on. So Steve asking Eddie if he was called to the house for... Oh, I love this. I was wondering if I was going to be called to the house for TV, Parcheesi, a little male bonding. Did you know what Parcheesi was before Steve made that reference?
I have no idea what it is now. I didn't even get a chance to look it up. Do you know what it is?
I looked it up. That's how I know what it is. Apparently, it's a brand name American adaptation of the Indian cross and circle board game Parcheesi. And that's as far as I went, because as you know, I want to live my life and not do a deep dive into Parcheesi and Parcheesi.
I feel like there's a long scroll that you have to read that's in like an ancient museum to understand both of those games. But I hope it was fun. Like, did it at least look interesting? Were there any pictures when you looked it up?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when I looked it up, it looked like a very like Dungeons and Dragony kind of game. So I feel like, yeah, it seemed like an interesting game. I mean, obviously it doesn't hold up well, because who the fuck in 2024 is mentioning Parcheesi or Parcheesi? But hey, that again, I guess that's what the cool kids were doing back in 1990. And then I loved when Eddie pleads to Steve to help him because he's flunking algebra. And that seemed to be a far cry from, you know, earlier when Carl and Eddie were doing the homework together. I mean, it seemed like, oh, Eddie was maybe doing sort of bad with the homework, but to the point where he's like literally getting an F in his entire algebra class. I feel like Carl's energy would have been different in that earlier moment. I think it would have been more of like, okay, son, here we go. You're flunky algebra, let's do this, rather than like, hey, you're Einstein, I know you know this. Like, does that make sense?
It does make sense, because there's a continuity error that happens here from what we get at the tutoring in the beginning to the results of the tutoring, technically, because I'm with you. If we would have known, which later on we find out this is for midterm exams that they were studying for, that means Eddie hasn't been doing good all year. And that's where it kind of like threw me off. I'm like, why did we jump from, oh, we're studying, and it's just a little light studying, to now I'm failing and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it is a big, big stretch for sure. And oh, that moment when Steve tells Eddie that, like, oh, you know, it's a busy time of year for me. I have to help the football team with fractions. I thought, God, what has it been, like 20 years since I've heard the word fractions? When was the last time you heard the word fractions?
It's been about that long, about 20 something years.
Yeah, yeah. Again, another example, and this was what I hated about math in school. Now, algebra I could do a lot better than geometry, but regardless of that, algebra, geometry, fractions, are we using that in the real world?
Yeah. I can't think of one time I've used a fraction in my real life. I can't think of it. And algebra and geometry, both of them, I had to take them multiple times, and I still don't understand it.
Yeah, yeah, but it doesn't matter, because like in our everyday life, like what we do for a living and how we go about paying our bills, it just doesn't factor. So, you know, just a pointless Americanized thing to make us think that this is going to lead to something, but it really leads to nothing. Then Eddie shows Steve his great third row prince concert seats to show like the urgency of the matter. Like, oh, hey, like, you know, look at how good my seats are. And I could be missing out on this if I flunk this midterm exam, I guess. One, I think it's silly to buy those concert tickets without a guarantee that you'll be there. A little bit gambly. Who bought them, by the way? Do you think it was Eddie's allowance? Do you think it's maybe his parents?
Maybe his parents, or I was thinking maybe he just saved up his money from work to get them, if he's still working at the grocery store, but we haven't gotten to a reference for it just yet.
Yeah, I forgot he was working. Yeah, I forgot he got the produce job. Assuming he's like 14 or 15, I guess you're legally able to work at that age. I mean, at least for me growing up in Connecticut, 16 was the minimum. And in Iowa, actually, where I moved to, it was 14. So I guess it may be 14 or 15 in Illinois. I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, I'm thinking there's got to be something, because the tickets themselves, I would imagine, even back then, weren't super cheap. So he would have to be making money on top of his allowance, at least from what I'm thinking, to afford them.
I would argue, because I remember that viral video of the guys from the band Nirvana, where they were like, oh my God, $25 to see Madonna? That's insane. So I would argue that it may have not been that expensive to see a concert. Maybe to some people, like, oh, God, $10, $12, that's out of my budget, but might have been pretty affordable to see Prince. Might have been. Okay.
I can see that. I mean, I have only been to one concert, so I don't know the prices.
Is it because of money, or you just never been a concert guy? Because I would imagine you having a good time at a concert. Beyonce especially.
I am not a concert person. I don't really have that urge to go with a bunch of people to watch somebody singing the music I listen to anyways.
Yeah. Okay. So if for you, it's like, I think you and I are the same thing. I mean, for me, I don't mind it as more of an intimate sort of like passerby listening it to on Spotify, on the radio experience. I think you feel more in touch with the musician's message and just the feeling that the song gives you, rather than like, oh, here's me with a bunch of like sweaty drunk people and you can barely hear the person because the sound quality is not great and blah, blah, blah. Now I will say, like, the energy, there is an energy to concerts that the audience gives that really gets you more to the song. I've experienced that with concerts, but I don't go out of my way to bankrupt myself like most people do. I think that there is value in being able to appreciate the song intimately. So
yeah, it's like you said, I am one of those people, let me experience it from home. If I go to a concert ever again, I want like a box. Like, I want a separate room where I can experience this, take off my shoes and relax, because I don't want to have to stand and be uncomfortable. Like, that just, it was fun, but that's just not for me. So I like just relax. Relax. Music should be a chill moment for me.
Yeah. And I would assume that, I mean, Eddie's a teenager with the Prince concert tickets. I would imagine that he has like standing room, like that fucking pit by the stage where you really get the sweaty claustrophobia of all the people next to you. I did find it funny when Steve says in response to the third row seats. So never mind. I take that back, because it's not pit seats. It's third row seats. That's what Steve said. Actually, no, I think it was what Eddie said. But anyway, Steve looks at the tickets and he's just like, oh my God, third row, you could get sweated on. And I was thinking, like, that hits different when you're talking about a Prince concert.
Yeah, that really does. It's gross.
Yeah, I mean, there's like family friendly sweaty rock star energy, and then there's Prince sweaty, where it's like, he might be sweaty for a much more R-rated reason.
This is sex sweat. It's got a different smell and everything to it.
Sex sweat. I'm trying to combine the word together. Sex sweat.
That sounds like a fancy cologne.
yeah, trust me, I've smelled plenty of cologne that smells like sexy sweat, and I say that in a bad way. Don't wear cologne, people. I don't like it, but maybe you like it. I don't know. Do you like it?
No, I am not a cologne wearer. It's too much work for me. I just smell good getting out of the shower, and I'll stick with that.
Yeah, for me, it's like soap, deodorant. I think my dad, when I was in middle school, he gave me a cologne that said eau de toilette, and it's toilet water in English. But it, you know, it smells like your average male cologne. But yeah, no, I just kind of made the decision along the way that this wasn't for me. And now, for some reason, I associate cologne with toxic masculinity. I don't know. There's just something about it where if I smell it on a stranger, I'm like, you probably have a wife beater on.
Okay, did you watch the movie Anchorman?
A long time ago.
Do you think of Dracar Noir, that like stuff that smelled like gasoline that they were putting on their bodies? That's what I imagine cologne is. It just smells terrible on people.
Oh yeah, it can be strong. It's one of those things that you have to put very lightly. Now, perfume, when women wear perfume, that can be very pleasing. I love those very delicate, fruity smells. But there's something about cologne to me where it's almost the same as like drinking like really rough whiskey. It's like you take the whiskey that would be really rough for me to drink, and then you're just pouring it all over your body, and then you're just like, "Hey, come and take me." Then Steve and Eddie, they sit on the center couch to review how Eddie will do anything for Steve to get his math exam aced. And did you notice that, like, there's something about Steve's hair in this episode that looks flatter? Like, just everything looks flatter than the previous episodes. I feel like maybe he had more of a little bit of a stretch, a little bit more of a high top. And now it's like, oh, you just got out of bed and you have like the matted black people head.
They brushed his hair down. He had on a wave cap before he came on screen or on set because his hair is like flat compared to the other episodes. I noticed that when you look at the lighting and some of the screens, it looks like he's bald because his hair is so flat on his scalp.
So I look forward to Jaleel growing his hair out just a little bit. It's not gonna be much, but just a little bit enough where we don't see the flat head. Oh, and I feel like Jaleel, he may have already grown a bit in height. He just seems a little bit taller sitting down on that center couch.
He is taller. That's another note that I had. He is taller, maybe by a little. You can notice it. It's not huge, but compared to when we saw him in episode 12, he's definitely taller.
And then when Steve gives Eddie the basic Urkel elementary exam, Urkel's trying to figure out, okay, Eddie, you claim that you need help on this math exam. I got to figure out how I can teach you at what level, level one, level two, level three. And then Urkel starts out by asking, like, all right, when you multiply a negative by a negative, and Eddie says, well, you get a really big negative. And look, I know that's made out to be the dumb Eddie response, but I honestly related to Eddie. I felt that because if you think about it, it doesn't make sense. We've talked about this before about, oh, negative, negative equals positive. But to me, I equate it to like when you have two cynical people and they talk about how terrible life is, how much they hate life, and then you do this Dragon Ball Z fusion of them into one person, and then all of a sudden they become this bubbly Richard Simmons, like, oh yes, life is great. That doesn't that, that's what it and that's what it's like to me. A negative plus a negative should be a super negative. I'm with you, Eddie.
100%, I'm with you, Eddie. I thought the same thing because I, to this day, I actually don't know if it's true. If it turns into a positive, I think we're being lied to because it doesn't make sense. I don't get it. But you're super negative superhero. I'm experienced in that.
Yeah, I look, the Google, the liberal Google mainstream media tells us that a negative and a negative equals a positive, but someday we're gonna find our own alternative facts, as they say, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we're gonna do that. Not too long from now. Next year, who knows what the world will be? So you know what? We can see 1 + 1 = 94 at some point. Steve holding the tickets as collateral is something that stuck out to me as like Steve is smart with what he's doing in here. And we're watching this whole buildup for this episode happen in this one scene.
Yeah. And we know that Steve will be willing to help Eddie with math if he gets a date with Laura on Friday night. To sort of pedal back a little bit, I did notice that Steve had this shirt under his button-down sweater, and it looked like he was wearing it backward because, like, if you notice, like, the top of the shirt, it seemed to go like past his Adam's apple. Someone should tell Jaleel to take the shirt off and switch it around.
I wonder if it was a choice by him to do that intentionally. I'm gonna have to watch that again because I didn't realize he did that.
And to go back to your point about like how we, see Steve use these Prince tickets from Eddie as collateral, I already had the image of this tiny 13-year-old kid being at a Prince concert of all things. I mean, it's one thing, like, okay, so Eddie, he's like 9 feet tall. He's almost like 25 at this point, but can you imagine Steve just trying to blend into a Prince concert with all the sexual shit that happens? Because he
I
doesn't
don't.
even know. The amount of stuff that he doesn't know, like, oh, you thought, seeing adult Rachel in the shower accidentally was going to be something. Go to a Prince concert. There's probably going to be plenty more of that.
I just get the feeling we'll see Steve in the concert, third row, cheering for Prince as Apollonia is playing. thing. And I just feel like that will be a great moment in history, but also super weird to watch this young nerdy kid at a Prince concert.
What was the song called? Apollonia?
Is it Apollonia? Is that the song I'm thinking of? I've got now, Prince
what,
in my head.
Okay, what dirty thing is Prince talking about in that song?
Apollonia, I think, is the name of his daughter.
Oh.
I am like, I'm here, but I can't think of which Prince song I'm thinking of right now.
That's part one of our recap of The Big Fix. Part two coming up. Hope you can join us.